Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are another week, man. What's top of mind for you right now?
Well, literally, if you look over my right shoulder, you can see a couple stockings there. I was just looking at that. And I was like, wow, it's Christmas is right around the corner. So
don't tell me you're playing Christmas music too right now.
They would hear. Yeah. No, but So just getting in that mindset, and you know, I'm coming close at the end of my term here with the Department of Education. So that's a reminder too. But what I'm passionate, what's energizing me is a conversation you and I had last night. It was just awesome. Like, we're sitting there meeting a new group. You facilitate kind of a smart city discussion, have some leaders. And the guy didn't even know that I was the co-host of the podcast. And then he met me and was saying, you know what? Your podcast got me so revitalized in my work. I listened to the Mitchell Weiss episode around We the Possibility of the book. And it just got me so pumped to restart stuff, to rethink things, try some new stuff. It was just fun to hear, like, that. You know, we didn't know each other before. It was a great rallying cry. And then it's what I do. I had one of those signed books in the car and grabbed it and gave it to him and said, nah, thanks for the inspiration. So that was neat.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's the point of the podcast, is to listen, get inspired from these stories of the people telling them. And yeah, I thought that was just such a great point. It's like, oh, by the way, I've got the book that you're referencing. Car signed.
His eyes lit up. He's like, no way. Now, I felt bad I didn't have 18. I felt bad I didn't have 18 copies for everyone. So I kind of felt like a jerk there, but hey.
Yeah, no, I thought that was fantastic. And what a good experience. Hopefully he reads it and has a good time. And again, gets reinvigorated and listens to more of the stories coming down the pipeline. So Chris, talk to us about our guests. Who do we have today?
Yeah, we have a great guest. I was going to say, we got to get to that. Jordan Davis. I know you've been talking about Columbus for a time. Why don't you start, and I'll kind of, I did happen to meet her about a month ago, which is great too. So
yeah, so did I. So obviously in the smart city space, Columbus made huge waves with the big, probably the first DOT smart city challenge that came out. Oh gosh, I can't even remember how many years ago.
The envy of every city.
That was the spark that I think catalyzed the smart city movement across the country, at least for the major metros. And so, you know, we always knew that Columbus won the grant, but I honestly just never had time to understand what they were doing, who was leading it. So it's exciting to see, to have Jordan, who's leading that effort, on the podcast to hear about the story.
Yeah, that part's going to be awesome. I know how excited I was. Lev Gonick, we've heard him referenced a few times in the show, hosted her and some folks to come out. And she was actually in our football suite as a guest for an ASU game, and got to experience the showcase that we have there on all the smart technologies in the stadium, things we're doing there. And so, I don't know, I'm excited. So what do you think? Should we get her on?
Let's bring her in. Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Jordan, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining today.
Good to be here.
Right on. Well, we like to start with information about you. We found it's the best way to build rapport between our guests and the audience. So what do you want the podcast audience to know about you? Maybe as a person, your background leading up, and we'll get to your current role in a little bit.
Sure. So my name is Jordan Davis, born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. I am a lover of cities, particularly the ones I've never been to. I love to travel, and my husband and I live right downtown, and he is also a lover of cities. So I'm excited to be talking about cities with you guys.
You've never met a city you haven't been to you didn't like, huh?
That's true.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So anything about leading up to that you want to share about what you've done in your career before you got to this point?
Sure. So I have a double major in political science and leadership studies, which sounds pretty darn broad as it is. I began my career right out of college with a company that choreographed flash mobs because I choreographed a pretty famous flash mob from Ohio State that went viral. And from that, I kind of rode this wave of trends. And I also worked on starting a high school leadership program. I still do the high school leadership program. I no longer choreograph flash mobs. But my life has certainly had very common themes. I really do believe in the power of leadership and have worked with some of the top Fortune 500 executives on how they lean into community impact, particularly in economic development. And I've done that through the Columbus Partnership and leading their member and community affairs, and then work at the intersection of public-private partnership today at Smart Columbus.
Awesome. Well,
that leads up to your role now. So tell us, what does it mean to be the executive director of Smart Columbus? And maybe anything, don't assume our audience knows about Columbus. Is there anything about the city that you want to highlight as well?
Yeah, good point. So Columbus is the 14th largest city in the United States. It's a region of just about 3 million people. It is one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest, and it is actually the largest city in the state of Ohio. Many people don't know that. Some of the brand cachet of Cleveland and Cincinnati certainly has a more storied history than Columbus, and that's really part of Columbus's DNA. Columbus is a new city. Its future is certainly ahead of us. And a lot of what we're experiencing is for the first time in the city. We're not really rebuilding or building back from much. We are constantly building into the unknown, which makes it a really exciting place to be a part of, and particularly to be helping shape its future. As a leader in this community, particularly in the work of Smart Columbus, it's particularly exciting to be in a community like Columbus, because I wake up and think every day about what the future looks like. How do we help the community achieve its ambitions of becoming the most prosperous region in the United States, but do it with leveraging the power of technology? And how do we think about technology as a way of getting to those objectives better and faster?
Wow, no small feat, become the most prosperous region in the United States. Let's dig it. I can't wait to find out more. This can be great.
Yeah, this is awesome. So, all right, Jordan, before we dig into kind of Smart Columbus a little bit more, how we started, this is our best question that we always ask, you know, smart cities, what's your definition? What's your view on it? We know that there's no one definition. There's no one right answer. So talk to us about how you define smart cities in your approach, and how does that kind of evolve into what you're doing today?
Yeah, so I think I've studied smart cities a lot, as you can imagine. And there's certainly the textbook definitions of the use of data and technology. I don't unsubscribe from that. I certainly believe that data and technology are fundamental to a smart city, but I think the human component is really central to it. So yeah. I really think of a smart city as a responsive city, as a city that's agile and able to respond to the needs of residents and with an efficient data and technology enabled system.
That's awesome. I love that. You know, so many times we talk about putting the person at the center of all of these efforts or initiatives, but I love that idea of a responsive city. I don't think I've heard that term before, so I absolutely love it. Yeah. Okay. So let's dig into Smart Columbus. So, you know, a lot of our audience always ask us, how do we start our own smart city initiative? Where do we go? How do we begin? Talk to us about Smart Columbus, because it has become a national kind of
best practice. How was it started? Talk to us about how it began, so that way people that are listening can kind of think about maybe starting something similar in their own community.
Well, Smart Columbus has a pretty unique story in terms of how it started. We pitched as part of the U.S. Department of Transportation's Smart Cities Challenge, and we chased a $40 million grant that was coupled with another $10 million from the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation. We competed against 78 other cities, seven finalists, which included Denver, San Francisco, Austin, Portland, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and us, and then ultimately became the sole winner. So we put a big vision out there, and then we caught it, and then we had no choice but to operationalize.
Wait, so that was the impetus. There was no Smart Columbus before.
There was no Smart Columbus before.
Wow, talk about rallying around an initiative. It's amazing.
Yeah, we actually pitched for to host the Democratic National Convention for 2016, just before this challenge, and we had really exercised a rallying muscle in the community and had to organize the private sector to be willing to put, you know, $50 million in to host this convention. And when we lost, which I think in retrospect was a good thing, we kind of shortly after had this other opportunity, and we kind of asked ourselves, you know, we were going to put this much in to host a convention. How about we put this much in to change the way we move and to really align with our brand?
Or $40 million and create a whole face for Columbus.
Totally. Yeah. So the timing really worked. And that was kind of the differentiator, I think, of our program, was certainly the human-centered nature of it, but also that we had rallied additional private sector investment, not just from one big company, but a collection of them, that we're going to put cash in and aligned resources behind the goals of the program.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point that I don't want our audience to miss out, but I think where you think it's unique to kind of rally around that DOT grant, I think that's a perfect piece of advice for a lot of cities. Sometimes it takes a federal government call to bring everyone together, but then how do you then sustain it into an organizational structure like you've done in Smart Columbus? I think it's just fantastic. So talk to us about that. I just want to double click on that private involvement. There's a lot of companies, a lot of CEOs, right? It was targeted towards the CEOs of local corporates, right? Talk to us about that, because cities often struggle with engaging the corporates and the CEOs of their towns or cities. So talk to us about that kind of engagement and how it came
in. So I study civic infrastructure a lot, and I think what's interesting about every community is we always have kind of center quarterbacks of different parts of the ecosystem, right? You typically have an arts council that's coordinating the performing arts organizations and making sure they're healthy, strong, and supported. You have the philanthropic community, and then the business community is typically organized and coordinated and healthy. Most communities have a chamber of commerce, and most communities have an economic development organization as well. Here in Columbus, we have something called a partnership on top of that. And the Columbus Partnership is the largest CEOs of the region that personally sit at a table thinking about the economic opportunities and risks and figure out how to join in partnership with the public sector on how to mitigate and to kind of catalyze those opportunities.
And that existed well before these responses,
correct.
Right? Yeah.
So that began in the late 90s and has really built over, you know, a few decades, a culture of public-private partnership that is really actionable. So it's not just a stacking of hands, but it can actually be operationalized really quickly. So it aligns resources, but also political support and also just kind of operational movement of commitment, whether it's, hey, let's get after DEI or youth employment. You have this kind of engaged population to quickly jump in and support these types of community initiatives. And I would say one of the power of this, which is an important cultural difference, I think, is the function of the partnership. So oftentimes business organizations exist to help make business stronger or make business better. Yep. The mission of the partnership is to help make the community stronger and leverage the business community to achieve that.
That's fantastic. I love it. You know, I love this. I think we're almost through this podcast right now. We're creating a blueprint, like leverage a catalyst, an opportunity, a grant, but then engage existing entities, existing groups that can then, you know, help rally around, mobilize resources. This is fantastic. So a lot of times too, when we're talking to mayors, city managers that are trying to set up these initiatives, we talk a lot about the leader, right? The person that's going to help lead the new smart city vision or plan for a city. So talk to us a little bit about your background with community engagement, especially with the partnership that you just described, but also Ohio State and the Central Ohio leadership. And how has those organizations contributed to your success and kind of helped you in the role that you're in now? Because I think it's great to understand kind of how are you successful?
Yeah, I mean, community work is so much about relationships, right? But then actually transferring the relationship capital into delivery trust. And so I've been able to do that in my career from going to the C-suite executives and mayor's office down to residents and into the bureaucracy, and thinking about how do we not just have those relationships, but also deliver on promises. And that's kind of always been my premise. I think that if you would ask folks in the community my leadership style or why they trust me to do this work, and it's probably because she gets it done. And that's kind of, as a young person stepping into these circles, that's really all I knew that would keep me there, was put my head down and just get the work done. And if I got the work done, there'll be more opportunities in front of me. And so that's kind of just been my philosophy, is get it done and try to not leave a lot of collateral damage in the process.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's great. Well, so what has the Smart Columbus team done with the funding? And, you know, help us understand how you quantify some of those early results. I'm sure, you know, there's ancillary things that you're proud of as well. So feel free to kind of just educate on what is the reality of coming together and what the funding allowed you to do that wasn't moving before.
I think there's two really important factors when we're measuring impact on the, and I think of them as first chapters and second chapters. So the first chapter of Smart Columbus was very much bookended by the start and the conclusion of the challenge. And in that set, we had, you know, strong direction and expectations from both funders on goals and accountability of the investment. And that really drove a lot of the structure around how we evaluated what success looked like. So much of that could have been performance driven, right? So the reliability of the technology from an autonomous vehicle standpoint to on electric vehicles, quantifying sales is a great, really intense metric that we tracked very closely. How many new electric vehicles do we sell in the region in the course of the program? And we tracked things really rigorously, from how many media impressions did we get on playbook activities to how many pings did we have on the operating system. And so things were tracked, and everything is actually open and for the public's use. So at smart.columbus.gov, we have all of our reports. SmartColumbusOS.com, which is the operating system, all the data is in that platform, and it's all open source. And we have a playbook that actually has all of the reports and case studies and writings about how we came, how we did the project management, how we measured things, and how the projects actually performed and what we learned.
And that playbook is found at which of those sites?
smart.columbus.gov.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I would say, though, beyond the metrics, I think what I'm most proud of goes back to the cultural impact of the work for the community at large. So we did the first chapter in public-private partnership between the city and the private sector. And we demonstrated how you could operationalize that commitment in a way that we haven't exercised anywhere else in the community. So for example, we had a program called the Accelerator Partner Program that we created. That was 70 private sector companies that committed to 5 goals to help electrify the transportation sector. So it included everything from a CEO driving electric to them introducing electric vehicle into their fleet, to educating their workforce on EVs by hosting a ride and drive, installing workplace charging, and companies stepped up beyond expectation.
Wow.
And that was a big part of our success. If you think about all how much time we spend at our employer. When your employer has a campaign like that, you pay attention. And it's a lot easier to capture people's attention in that environment than trying to do mainstream media.
Wow, that's huge. Is that open? Is that commitment open to the public? Like those five things that you initially asked them to do? Is that, wow, I think that's such a great playbook. I mean, I'm thinking about all the corporates here and elsewhere that you can, hey, so let's start with five. But like you said, it just naturally probably progresses on its own. The momentum builds and then they're doing much more than those five. That's such a great idea. Sorry, Chris, to jump in.
Chapter two, we have nine goals. So we
that's good. Yeah. So tell us about chapter
build
two.
On it.
So chapter two is, I'm most proud that we are still alive through the pandemic. Like that is awesome. But chapter two.
Does that mean you got more funding than the 50 million alive in terms of resources or physically alive that you're still here? Yeah. One of our last guests, he asked him how he's doing. He's like, I'm still alive. I'm like, oh, geez.
A little bit of both, right? Yeah, my public health is intact or my health is intact. Our team's health is intact. But so is the health of our organization. And I think we will be even healthier, I think, in the recovery. And that is one of the big responsibilities of Smart Columbus. When we think about, we really sat down with our board and kind of said, well, what is this that we've built? Why do we want it as a community? We know we needed it to achieve the grant, but why do we need it to achieve what the community wants to do long term? And I think it really came down to, we need this innovation muscle in our community if we want to lead and achieve our goals. And so we've kind of anchored in core competencies that we want to make sure we're really good at. So project management, innovation project management, in terms of civic tech and other type of technology projects and data, and then human-centered design. And we think those are real two distinctive capabilities that provide a value set and how we can solve problems in a more coordinated way. And then how do we use it against really critical issues for the community's future? So we've identified, you know, mobility and smart mobility continuing to be a priority, sustainability, because we believe that a future city must be, you know, sustainable, and we should lead in that, especially in the Midwest. And then digitalization, which is really the core smart city type action. So how do we increase the digital maturity of our city and our residents and how we experience and navigate our quality of lives. And so then we have across that a cornerstone set of impact projects that we are defining and really shaping what our role will be over the next 4 or 5 years. And so we've made tremendous progress on that this year. And then next year, I think we'll be more increasingly in implementation mode and then exploring for more opportunities in our impact areas.
Interesting. Recently, you were out in the Phoenix Valley doing a little, I'm assuming a little reconnaissance, but also some fun. Anything that you found of interest that's influencing the direction you're taking?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you guys are doing in terms of just this decentralized empowerment of innovation from a culture at ASU is really compelling to me. I think of Smart Columbus as kind of a center point within the region, and the ecosystem are nonprofits, you know, public, private, academic, but also residents. And how do you make this a platform that's encouraging and facilitating a lot of people to take on really disruptive ideas and interesting collaborations? And how can we be fueling and feeding that? And I really like how much of a culture is yes and within ASU. And I think we can learn a lot from that as well here in Columbus. So that was one thing that really inspired me there. And I think, you know, what we're doing in digital divide and supporting economic development certainly mirrors a lot of what you all are thinking about there too.
Cool. Go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask about that because, you know, ecosystem, talk about how, you know, Smart Columbus, have you seen the ecosystem starting to like come around it, or at least talk about smart cities or talk about EVs or right? How has the Smart Columbus really kind of ignited or at least brought people together into a same conversation? Because you're right, before I'm sure it was nonprofits over here doing this, other private companies doing this. How has it kind of like brought a common conversation to the ecosystem in Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a real, it's one, both created a conversation that never existed before, but then it also unified a series of conversations that were happening, but not really in coordination. So the coordination really began in smart mobility. There were a lot of people that had ideas or, you know, wanted to do these things, but didn't really have the validation that that's where so-and-so wanted to go, or this entity really, you know, was going to take a risk and deploy autonomous vehicles or something. And it kind of gave that validation and that push that people had for these ideas and brought those out of the background. Awesome. So those became present in strategic plans. They became present in the Regional Planning Commission's policies for funding. And this concept of being future ready really became adopted. We saw a leadership change at the Transit Authority, and in the profile of the leader that they selected was a commitment to innovation and future of transportation. So you really saw that really kind of coalesce in an alignment. In terms of like new conversations, I think this idea of human-centered design and product type management approaches in the public sector and the community really became something we hadn't really been thinking about, if that makes sense. I'm sure you guys have seen this, but we often in community, we work really hard on a plan with, you know, grass tops community leaders, and then get consensus through sharing out what we're thinking versus kind of doing two-way engagement at the beginning and problem definition at the front end, and then responding to that problem definition with those ideas. Validating. And so this, I think this process of leading with people first and technology second has really been why we are doubling down on that competency in Smart Columbus, because we think there is a more effective way of how we can plan and think together as a community.
That's great.
We're excited about that.
I mean, you're doing such novel things, and a lot of it's probably quote hasn't necessarily been done before, at least for these purposes. Has the entrepreneurial surroundings kind of come together? Because a lot of the partnerships already existed. You just found a way to kind of tap them in this new direction. And a lot of them sound like large companies, but have new companies formed to kind of take things forward? Or is that part of your mission to stimulate new companies? I'm just curious about that side.
Yeah, we kind of think of innovation from a civic innovation lens. Like, we want to be the engine behind how we think about solving societal issues differently, predominantly through the institutions that deliver those services or, you know, solve those problems. However, in the prior chapter, and I think what we'll see more in the future is as you start to stimulate those types of that type of thinking and that type of ambition, there then become startups that are solving those problems that fit in within those solutions. So we saw, because we declared we wanted to think differently about transportation and we wanted to get more, aggressive and connected, autonomous, shared and electric mobility, we had new companies coming to the market, deploying solutions, putting Columbus on par with Chicago in their launch plans, because they knew that this is a city that wanted to be a part of and support their business models. So we think that we'll see similar activity in this broader portfolio of work as well. Locally, there's certainly been pivots. I think there's the way I think about it is it's just as valuable if our bigger companies get more innovative because they're closer to the innovation on the ground than
Sometimes they already have the idea, but they need the vehicle to bring it to life too. And maybe you're helping do that and helping them, because otherwise what happens is the big companies then die out, and then there's this whole other kind of thing that happens. But so we do have a couple standard questions, but we're curious, or at least I am. You mentioned the first chapter, the second chapter, which is kind of the next year's roadmap. Is there anything far out that if you were wildly successful, you believe Smart Columbus will make happen? I mean, what are you most excited that this can lead to off on the horizon?
I think I'm most excited about closing the digital divide at this current point in time. I lived at the forefront of saying, this is what the future is going to be. And we're going to be all, you know, riding in self-driving vehicles. And these are the use cases. And I still very fully believe in that. But I think in order for us to really bring about that future in an equitable way, we have to solve this digital divide. And it's never been more urgent or apparent. And why let a crisis go to waste? So I really believe this is kind of a once in a generation moment to solve that problem. And Smart Columbus has been asked to step up as kind of a central capture manager and coordinator for the community's response to how we do that. And so I am very excited that I think we can make a once in a generation dent in the problem.
Great. Well, what can we do, if anything, to help you do more? You know, whether it's if someone was listening and they could do it, or if we opened a door to make it happen, help us understand kind of what your big challenges are and what could be a rallying cry for someone that's listening.
Well, we're hiring, so that's one thing. Finding talent these days. So we're looking for excellent project managers and human-centered design researchers. And just people generally passionate in the space that are capable doers. So would love if anyone's interested to reach out as we're growing our team, and also invite people with innovative and disruptive ideas about how to solve community problems. We certainly always like to talk to folks, whether they're just enthusiasts or they're startups. We're always excited to hear what people.
Where will they reach you? I mean, we'll publish this on social, but where would they reach you if they are interested in either job or like an email address? How do they find Jordan?
Yeah, jld@smartcolumbus.com.
jld@smartcolumbus.com. All right, great. You're going to get a flood.
I hope so.
All right, and last question. Dom and I, we know we can't do this alone. We can't do the things we're doing here in the Phoenix Valley alone. Is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative in your journey and selfishly for us by learning about the urban complex? If you think they'd be a great host, let us know that as well.
So I have an advisor, Jerry Holton, who also is, I believe, an adjunct professor. He does something at ASU with his knowledge and expertise that, and he imparts
where
it.
Where doesn't upon. Jerry do stuff? That's yes. What I'm learning. So he was our MC. The guy has amazing energy. He was our MC awesome. For a whole smart event. And like, he had more energy than Dom and I. We were like, what is going on?
Yeah, he's one of the best people, and I'm fortunate to call him a mentor and a friend. And he, I just think his wisdom is deep and broad both. So he's great to pick his brain. I also think Gabe Klein has been a great advisor to me over the years with CityFi. He was a former transportation director in DC and in Chicago, and now helps cities across the country in their future mobility plans and actions. And so I can't speak highly enough of him either. But those two in particular have really shaped my points of view and how I think about the work.
Excellent. Some more ideas. Okay, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Jordan Davis, Executive Director of Smart Columbus. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jordan.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving our why, also continue to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
Okay, Don, that was Jordan. What'd you think?
Incredible, right? What an inspiration and what a great story.
And now we know the story. We've been talking about Columbus forever.
Oh, exactly. Now we can talk to it. And I mean, again, what an inspiration for anyone in the smart city space, smart region space, any leaders trying to do this. I mean, her story and the Smart Columbus story is phenomenal. I'm trying to look through all my notes and see what I want to highlight the most. But I think, again, we really talked about it, though, this fact of, you know, they leveraged a call, a federal competition to bring the people, the stakeholders together to start the conversation. And then they leveraged existing organizations or an existing group, that partnership that already had the CEOs coming together regularly.
to then now have a conversation about smart cities. They leveraged it, used the competition to focus the the efforts around an idea around the smarter Columbus, and then they sustained it by building an operational and governance model around it.
I was stunned. I thought for sure Smart Columbus existed before they responded. So right? Like anyone listening, that is inspiration in itself. Now, the interesting thing she shared that probably people don't know is they actually got together, not for Smart Columbus, but try to get a convention. That didn't go well. And then they re-galvanized with new intentions. So just like we've said before, think big, start small, pilot, fail, pivot. Like they did all that. And that's pretty cool.
It makes me wonder, like, how many cities or groups out there, oh, we want to host the Super Bowl. Oh, we want to host. And they get people together and they get excited and they say, okay, yeah, we're going to commit funding to it. They don't win. And then the group just probably disperses. Instead, what she did so well is, hey, we got everyone together. We got everyone excited. It didn't happen. Well, why don't we just pivot it?
When I think that's why Jordan's approach of these long-term relationships and leveraging those existing channels, like that leadership group, the chamber she mentioned, the Ohio State, of course, then the group of CEOs, the Central Ohio leadership, like they just keep using the same formula and find the people that want to go after these other things. I think it's great.
Yeah. And then the other big thing, but before I do, I loved how she's Columbus, the future's ahead of us. Like I love that saying. I wrote it down because I thought it was great. And then the responsive city as a definition to smart cities, I thought that was phenomenal as well. But what I really want to hit on for our listeners is this idea of, okay, once they did all the good stuff of setting it up, getting people talking about it, they won the grant, but what happens when they win it? What happened to the ecosystem? She said it became present in everything people were doing, whether it was conversations, whether it was the future budget. All of a sudden now people were budgeting for future technology or future innovation, the hiring of people. Now it was in the job description. They wanted to hire someone that was innovation forward, right? It all of a sudden the ecosystem now had this mentality of the future of Columbus or the future of the city or the region, right? It just became present in the conversation because of what Smart Columbus was able to do.
Yeah, and it was even interesting how they leveraged the Columbus partnership of those CEOs. They had those folks buy in, 70 leaders buy in to 5 things they were all going to do and literally embedded into the work and made their work the showcase of the things that reinforced, like how to get an EV embedded that then led to their goals of the broader Smart Columbus that gets EV sold and adopted and all that. Like they made the CEOs drive an EV, right? Start. They made them bring tools to showcase their employees. And, you know, people have time at their workplace to do things. We spend a lot of time at our workplace. We do. And everyone does. And so if you can make it part of the interactivity of being there and part of the things they're highlighting actually gets people to take action. So yeah, it's pretty great.
It was great. What were your kind of takeaways?
Well, a lot of the same things. I did anchor in on one more, which was the core competence. Literally, I called it anchoring because that's what she said. We're anchoring on core competencies. And I know this from my work at Arizona State University. And I know this in how there's such a gap in these things at cities, just based through our KIC, Cloud Innovation Center opportunities. The civic tech project management side, like how do you embed innovation in civic tech as a PM? That's a wholly different process. So like a lot of the working backwards stuff we do through the Cloud Innovation Center, I think is what they're trying to do. And then the human-centered design element, how do you embed the right questions? How do you make sure that you're getting empathy for those you're trying to serve? Those are things I think that anyone can translate into their roles. And you heard at the end, she's trying to hire these people like, not a lot come from industry having already embedded those thoughts, but it's changing.
Yeah.
That's what universities are starting to teach. That's what the best companies are doing. So I thought that really resonated to me.
Yeah, so true. I think especially for organizations like ours, the Connective or Smart Columbus, what a great piece of advice, because too many times we think, oh, we're supposed to do everything. We have to be this innovation organization for everyone and do everything. But she's like, no, we're doing 2 things, innovation project management, and that human-centered design. Like it was perfect, right? That's what they're focusing on, and that's what they're going to really hit home with. I think that's a great piece of advice for anyone that's running similar organizations
in other cities or regions. Yeah, really good.
For sure.
Awesome. So, I mean, yeah, we're definitely going to have her back on the show.
Well, for sure, because they're going to keep doing great things.
Yeah, I want chapter 6. I want chapter 7. You know what I mean? What the?
Although it's got to get us a little competitive, because she they want to become the most prosperous region in the U.S. We got to talk to Sandra and Chris and step up our game. Make sure we don't get left behind.
Right, exactly. Love it. So that was Jordan. So what about Cracks in the Pavement this week? What do you got for us?
Yeah, let's see. There's an interesting article. Shoot, I just lost here. It's about the largest mixed-use developments in the nation, and talk about some big ones. We know, Novus back here in our backyard is massive. It's multi-year, but it highlights Frisco, Texas, $2.5 billion development. Those that know the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, Frisco is right at the center of all that. You got Alexandria, Virginia. You got Boston comes up. Brookhaven, New York, not one I'm familiar with, and then West Palm, Florida. So, and the smallest of those largest is $500 million. So there's some serious capital being deployed. Mixed use is all the norm. We can dig into some of those. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I'm just looking at the size of some of these. It's mind blowing sometimes to think about. But yeah, I think this is like the trend. I mean, we're seeing it in Arizona all over the place. These massive developments instead of, you know, kind of urban infill. It's all of a sudden now starting to become these,
totally,
you know, big
a lot of outdoor recreation, but I'm also seeing a lot of equity, affordable housing, and making it available. A lot like with some of our transportation experts. How do we get people to where they need to work, where they need to play, where they need to learn, and obviously have the recreation too.
Well, and here's where I think the challenges have been coming, Chris. This goes to the conversation we were having last night with, you know, David Ricketts in Harvard, when he was talking about the town of Cary and the park they're trying to build. And we should definitely get the town of Cary on here. It's not so much the technology in the development. It's how do we integrate the development into the city surrounding it? And so I think that's going to be the challenge for a lot of these communities.
Yeah, that's a great point to highlight. And one of the things we've been trying to do at ASU with Novus is how do we involve the cities that are part of the development, involve the citizens that are engaging there and finding unique solutions. So more to come on that. We had some great discussion yesterday on that topic. So good point.
Awesome. Well, another great week, Chris. Well done.
Right on. Well, that's a wrap. See y'all.
Yep. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.